Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and I want to tell you a little bit about myself before we get started. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Florida, a master's degree in education from Armstrong Atlantic State University, and a doctorate in education from Georgia Southern University. I'm a certified clinical hypnotherapist, a member of both the American Board of Hypnotherapy and the National Guild of Hypnotists, and I'm president of the American Alliance of Hypnotists. I'm the director of the Steve G. Jones School of Clinical Hypnotherapy. I also serve on the board of directors of the American Lung Association in Los Angeles. I have over 2 decades of experience in hypnotherapy, and I still maintain a busy practice and teaching schedule because I see clients and teach classes worldwide. My client base consists mainly of people who want to lose weight, stop smoking, or gain confidence. Other clients include sales teams interested in boosting motivation and increasing income. Also, singles looking for love, insomniacs desiring proper sleep, and actors desiring more confidence for their next audition. When I travel to see clients and teach hypnotherapy certification classes around the world, I visit such places as Tokyo, Japan, Barcelona, Spain, Paris, France, London, England, Montreal, Canada, Los Angeles, California, and New York, just to name a few. By the way, since you have an interest in hypnosis, perhaps you'd be interested in becoming a certified clinical hypnotherapist. It's very easy to do. All you have to do is go to my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com, and click on Hypnosis Classes at the top. You can either train in person or online. After your training, you'll be added to our worldwide directory of certified clinical hypnotherapists, and you'll receive a certificate. I was fortunate for many years to have my office in Beverly Hills, California, where I worked with such wonderful people as Tom Mankiewicz, the writer of Superman, Geraldine Saunders, the writer of The Love Boat, and many other celebrities. I have been interviewed on CNN, Fox News, and appeared on True TV, in addition to having my own hypnosis TV show. With my over 20 years of experience, I'm happy to share with you techniques that I've both developed and learned which can help you improve your life. I encourage you to visit my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com. There you will find my life's work, 22 books on hypnotherapy, over 3,000 hypnosis recordings available as downloadable MP3s or CDs, and these recordings will program your mind to achieve goals in such areas as weight loss, motivation, and stopping smoking. I also have audiobooks, such as this one, where I'm talking with you and sharing with you in a very dynamic way techniques that you can use to improve your life and the way you do things. The reason I'm telling you all of this is not to impress you, but to impress upon you that I, your teacher, am very capable and I know what I'm talking about. I'm also very happy for the opportunity to share this information with you, so rest assured that you're in good hands and let's have some fun as we now expand your knowledge. I wish you well in all of your endeavors and please be sure to visit my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com. In this module, we're going to review what's in the program. It's important that you understand what you are about to listen to and what you are about to receive into your subconscious mind and into your conscious mind so that you can prepare to make it part of your life. I'm going to start out with my wealth story. And when I talk about that, I want you to really tune in because I realize that not everyone's wealth story is the same. Not everyone's story of going from rags to riches is the same. But my hope is that in telling my story, you will find something you can relate to strongly. You will look at my story and you will say, aha, there's something that I can relate to because I see myself, I hear myself, I feel myself as part of that story. I can relate to it on some level. And so the idea is that I'm going to inspire you to keep moving forward. Wherever you are, however your journey is developing, I want you to realize that you are somewhere. You are moving along a path, and I want you to keep moving along that path in the direction of wealth. I'm also going to talk about seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Many times we don't realize that success is ahead of us. Success is just around the corner. Or if we just push a little further, we're going to become successful. So I'm going to get you pumped up in a good way, in a positive way. Not just like one of those seminars that pumps you up and then Monday morning you feel flat again because you're no longer around all those people. I'm going to pump you up in a good way, which means that I'm going to show you in your life how the light is at the end of your tunnel, how you're moving toward that already, and all you have to do is make a few simple adjustments. You don't have to have this ecstatic energy in everything you do all the time as you would at a seminar. You just have to make a few powerful changes that you can logically implement and easily implement into your life, and you can make the adjustments that are going to take you from where you are to where you want to be. I'm also going to teach you about the fact that you are in charge of your financial future. So many people feel like victims. When I had no money, of course, living in the United States, nobody ever has no money. They always have some money, or they have access to someone who has some money, but we like to say that. When I had no money, meaning, of course, when I had very little money, I felt like a victim. And so if that's where you are, then I know how you feel. But I want you to realize, until that changes, until you let go of that victim mentality, you're going to stay on that path. So I want to get you out of that. So I'm going to talk about how you are in charge of your financial future. I'm also going to talk about smart spending. Smart spending is very important. Now, it changes over time. Once you become very wealthy or where you want to be, smart spending becomes different, because then it becomes smart sometimes to fly first class, for example. Whereas when you're building wealth, it makes no sense at all. You can spend all your money flying first class and then be back to no money. But sometimes it makes sense. And so I'm going to talk about that. And just to give you a preview, why it would make sense to fly first class, because that's where a lot of the business people are who are going to take you even to the next level. That's where you make a lot of connections, believe it or not. Flying on an airplane first class. But initially, if it takes everything you've got to fly first class, I consider that a gamble that's inappropriate. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about smart spending. We're also going to talk about visualizing your wealth. After all, I am a hypnotherapist. I do know about visualization. It's very important that you visualize your wealth. And some people consider this to be a trite thing to say, oh, visualize your wealth and put it on a vision board and think about it. And it's been made fun of a lot. But I want to tell you, it's one of the simplest and easiest and most powerful ways to become wealthy. If you focus on it every day, your subconscious mind starts to look for ways to create it in your life. So we're going to talk about visualizing your wealth. We're going to talk about the drive to succeed. You've got to have a drive to succeed. I don't care if you're driving down the road or if you're driving toward making $10 million a year. You've got to have a drive to get to where you want to be. No drive, no action, no action, no result. You've got to have a drive. It doesn't mean that you've got to be jumping up and down ecstatically every day. Some people think that they've got to get up and they've got to be revved up all the time and yell at people and always be on. You know, people who are always pumped up, like salespeople are always on and so forth. You don't have to be that way. If that's your personality, then great. I think it's wonderful. Those people are very entertaining and exciting to be around. I'm not one of those people, but if you are, that's great. But it's not necessary. You don't have to be like that. But what you do have to be like when you have this drive to succeed is someone who believes in the future. That's where the vision becomes important, because it pulls you toward the future. You've got to be someone who every day gets up and says, you know, maybe today I'm not going to figure out how to make millions of dollars, but I'm on that path, and everything I do every day leads to that. I do a little bit every day, and it gets me to where I want to be. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about drive. I'm talking about consistency. I'm talking about persistence. Then I'm going to talk about my wealth story. I'm going to talk about how in my 20s I was a preacher. I was in college. I didn't have a lot of money. I'm going to talk about how I viewed money, how I made and how I spent money, and what my money goals were for the future. Because no matter what was going on in my life, and hopefully you'll see some parallels between your life and my life. Maybe you're not a preacher. Maybe you're not in college. None of that matters. What I'm illustrating here is designed to allow you to see some similarities. Not an exact replica of me in yourself, but some similarities. Maybe you're in a similar place to where I was. Maybe you're not the same age. Maybe you're much older now. Maybe you're 40 or 50 or more. And just starting out on the path to building wealth, saying, okay, this is it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it happen. I want to share with you now my wealth story. I haven't always been what I would consider to be wealthy. And I'm talking about financial wealth. I've always considered myself to be spiritually wealthy. I've always considered myself to have a wealth of friends, to have a wealth of energy, to have an abundance of health. I've considered myself to be rich with love. But I haven't always considered myself to be financially wealthy. And that's what this program is about, getting you from where you are to being financially wealthy. And so I want to share with you my story. Keep in mind that as I'm sharing this with you, there should be parts of it that you can relate to. Now, I'm going to start back in my 20s. I was a preacher. I was in college. I was married. There was a lot going on in my life. I was juggling a lot of things, but in my 20s, I had a lot of energy. Honestly, if I went back to do that now, if I was a preacher and I was in college and I was actually running my business and so forth, I had so many different things going on that I think I may have done things differently. I may have delegated. I've gotten really good at delegating lately. It's one of those things that you learn as you get older. You delegate things to other people. Next month, I'll be 44 years old. So that's where I am in life. And I've learned that delegating can be a great thing. You let go of some of your power, but you get a lot more done. And back then, I didn't believe in delegating anything. I wanted to do everything myself, and I had all the energy to do it, and it worked out great. But I was a preacher, I was in college, I was married, and I viewed money with a scarcity mentality. I really did. I viewed money as something that needed to be budgeted very tightly. I was living with a limited amount of money. And when I say a limited amount of money, I mean that I knew how much money I was going to get, and it was the same amount of money every month. It wasn't increasing. And that was okay because I had a budget right down to the dollar. I mean, I really did. I had it right down to the dollar. I knew where everything was going. And I was married at the time. I remember one time my wife went out and got some donuts, I think it was. Now, this is back in the late 80s, and she got some donuts. And I had budgeted everything down to the dollar, and she got some donuts, and that threw off my calculations by about $3. And I thought, oh no, what are we going to do? The calculations are off. I mean, that's how tight things were. There was a lot of rice and chicken going on because they were inexpensive and reasonably nutritious. So I know what it's like to live under constraints, but seriously, I didn't really feel it at that time. I felt an abundance of energy and love from friends and so forth, and I felt that whatever happened, I could deal with it. I could handle it. It wasn't really a big deal. So although looking back at it now, it almost frightens me to think how close to the financial edge I was living. At the time, it didn't feel that way. It just felt like I was young and I was starting out and I was doing things and making it happen. So I had a really good attitude. And that is a powerful tool to have. No matter what you're going through, if you have a good attitude, it really helps. I remember flying. I used to be afraid of flying in airplanes. And I would look around at everyone before takeoff and I would notice that some people were smiling, some people were joking and so forth. And I thought, how can these people have a positive attitude? We're about to do something that's extremely risky. There should be a lot of concern on their faces, but they're smiling and some people were reading, some people were already sleeping. And I thought, what is wrong with these people? Why aren't they wide awake? Because I thought the more awake I stayed, the more I could take care of the airplane. You know, somehow I had this fantasy that if something went wrong, I could help out, at least in my mind or something like that. I don't know. But I thought that me staying awake had a lot to do with the success of the flight. And here are these people sleeping. I thought they're letting us all down on the job. These passengers should be wide awake and we should all be helping out here. Now I realize that everything's taken care of. It's okay. And me staying awake has very little to do with anything when it comes to flying. So the thing that these people all had in common was that they had a positive attitude. They had a positive outlook about the flight, expressed in different ways. Some of them were reading, some people were laughing, some people were sleeping, but they all had this sense of security. That's what I was seeing, at least, when I looked around. And that's what I had, not necessarily with flying at the time, but that's what I had with my life in general, this sense of everything's going to work out. Okay, so I'm doing this budget and things are down to a dollar. Things are that tight, but everything's going to work out because I have a lot of energy, I'm young, there's time, it's going to get better, I'm going to build this, I'm going to change things, and so forth. And that's actually what happened. That's the way it worked out. So your attitude is the most important tool that you take into a situation. And I'm blessed to have friends like that now. Sometimes I'll be in a situation still, which I think may go one of two ways, and I'm a little concerned about the situation, and my friends will be smiling and laughing and joking. And I think, wait a minute, I should be doing that. I should start smiling and laughing and joking. No matter what, a negative attitude isn't going to help at all, and a positive attitude could very well help. A positive attitude, when you use the law of attraction, goes a long way. Because you put on that positive vibe, it comes back to you even more powerfully. But it gets a little tricky, doesn't it? It gets a little tricky when you are very close to being broke. It gets a little tricky when, let's say, you're not 20 anymore, you're 30 or 40 or even older, and you're close to being broke. Then it becomes a little bit more of a challenge. But I want to tell you that you can tap into the same energy no matter where you are in life. You can tap into that same positive energy. But it almost doesn't make sense to some people when you say, just keep your chin up, just think positively. No matter where you are, just think positively. And they say, oh yeah, well, I've got all these bills and this is going wrong and that's going wrong and it's just going to get worse. And that's where they're thinking. And I want to tell you that even if you view that as reality, even if you believe that's the honest truth, that things are bad and getting worse, you've got to stop thinking that way if you want things to change. You've got to almost start telling yourself things that you think are not true about money, about your situation, about where you are. You've got to start telling yourself something different. Otherwise, it's just going to stay the same or even get worse. You've got to start telling yourself that you are financially abundant, even if it seems like a joke, even if you're next to being bankrupt or next to being completely broke. You've got to start telling yourself that you are financially abundant. Why is that? It's because your subconscious mind responds to how you talk about yourself and your possibilities. And when you talk positively, your subconscious mind starts to look for ways to make that your reality. So that's one thing I had going for me in my 20s. I was preaching, I was in college, had limited money, but I had a positive attitude. My money goals for the future at that time were not to become a millionaire, were not to become a billionaire. They weren't even to make over $100,000 a year. My goals at that time were to pay the bills, keep things together, to make everything okay. I always thought at that time that being wealthy was something that happened in the future. Now, if you want to speed up your timeline, if you want to become wealthy before I did in a shorter period of time, then just move up your timeline. Just speed it up. Make your goal bigger. Now, in my 30s, I was living in Los Angeles, and I really started to establish myself as a hypnotherapist. In the year 2000, I moved to Los Angeles, California. I got an office shortly after that in Beverly Hills. My zip code was 90210. I was in the Roxbury Medical Building. It was me and a bunch of plastic surgeons in the same building. Celebrities started coming to me. The week before that, the celebrities didn't know who I was. Once I showed up in the Roxbury Medical Building and had my ad in the Yellow Pages advertising that I was in Beverly Hills, they started showing up. And they kept showing up. And they're still showing up. Even though I no longer have an office in Beverly Hills, they're still showing up. Now, why did I do that? Why did I get an office in Beverly Hills? I could have gotten a cheaper office somewhere else. I wanted to invest in my future at that point. That was what I was doing. I viewed money at that time as something that you can make more of and more of and more of. I raised my rates. Now, back then, my rates raised from $50 an hour, which I thought was a lot. I thought that was a reasonable amount, to $250 for the first two-hour session. So I more than doubled my rates. I started viewing money as something that I could make more of. I also started getting into Tony Robbins recordings then. I had been into them before in the 80s, and I have a lot of respect for Tony, but I started getting into recordings like that, you know, and not just how to make money, but how to improve all aspects of your life, but in particular, how to make money and how to increase that. And I started analyzing how I made and spent money, and I started looking at people around me because suddenly my colleagues were plastic surgeons in Beverly Hills. I was not a plastic surgeon, of course, but I would walk outside of my office and there would be a plastic surgeon. They have a different way of thinking than I had at that time. I wanted to have their way of thinking. I wanted to have their view of money. They had a different view of money. When I first got my office in Beverly Hills, I still had a small apartment in Los Angeles. Shortly after that, I moved out toward the water. I moved to Marina Del Rey. I started improving my life. I started upgrading my life. I got rid of my Nissan Sentra and got a convertible. I started improving things. I didn't start making purchases that didn't make sense, but I started moving closer and closer to wealth, and I started associating more and more with wealthy people. Now, if you haven't been to California or if you're not familiar with Los Angeles in particular, Beverly Hills is a very nice place that's got an international reputation, but so is Marina Del Rey. So I moved from Los Angeles, the middle part of it, to Marina Del Rey. That was a significant move in terms of moving closer to where people with money lived. I wanted to be near this thing called money. I wanted to be near people who had more money. Why? Because I wanted a better quality of life. I knew that by associating with people who had more money than me, I would start adopting their habits, and I did. My friends suddenly were wealthy people. I was not wealthy. I wanted to be wealthy, not just for the sake of being wealthy, but I wanted some of the nicer things that money could buy. I wanted to not have to worry about things. I wanted to have freedom. And so I noticed that they talked differently. They talked differently about wealth. I also noticed that in many ways they talked the same as other people. They were interested in bargains. They were interested in saving money. They had all of these interests, but it was at a different level, at a higher level, if you will, at a higher financial level. And the things they really had interest in were things such as tax strategies. Rather than being overly concerned about clipping coupons and saving money on groceries, which they also had an interest in, they were interested in long-term wealth and preserving wealth and passing wealth from generation to generation, things like that, that I hadn't even considered. Because here I was just trying to make more money, not even realizing that more money equals more taxes. Now we've got to have another plan to offset that. They had already figured it out. They were ahead of me. And anytime you want to get better at something, hang out with people who are better than you at it. When I wanted to get better at tennis, I started hanging out with my friends who were tennis pros. When I wanted to get better at soccer, I started hanging out with my friends who were soccer players, professional soccer players. Does that mean I was instantly good? No. Does that mean I was much better right away? No. But what it does mean is that my eyes were opened to what the highest level really looks like. And once you see that, it changes your perspective. You can play tennis all day long with your buddies who are as good as you. But when you play against a tennis pro, you may not do very well, but you get a glimpse at what the highest level looks like. And it changes your perspective. Suddenly you start working harder. You realize that you can be a lot better than you are. It's the same thing with money. You start hanging out with people who make more money than you, you're going to realize there's a whole different ball game you could be playing that you're not playing yet. And so you start to incrementally work toward that. It doesn't mean that hanging out with rich people is going to make you rich overnight, but it will give you ideas that you can slowly put into your life. Also in my 30s, I developed my passion for helping people even more. I realized that this money thing wasn't going to happen all by itself, and chasing money wasn't going to be it for me. In my 20s, I was a preacher after all, so chasing money felt kind of dirty to me, felt kind of icky, felt kind of like I shouldn't be doing it. So I realized that the only way I was going to be okay with money is if I made it by helping more people. So I really started to make that firm association. Helping people equals making more money, therefore making more money is okay. Now, whatever you have to do in your mind to be okay with money is what you have to do. Because the worst thing that can happen is that you can be not okay with making a lot of money. And then you make a lot of money and your subconscious mind sabotages it. You know, starts to gamble it away or starts to spend it frivolously because you're trying to whittle down to where you feel comfortable. That's what happens when you don't prepare yourself for wealth. But when you're prepared for wealth, you accept it and you allow it to grow. So for me, big hurdle was making sure that my wealth was based on something positive, that I was creating wealth with other people, not necessarily with money, but creating wealth in their lives, creating abundance for them in whatever they wanted help with. Therefore, when I got paid and I started getting paid more and more, I felt comfortable. Now, in my late 30s, I raised my rate to $2,500 for the first session. Then in my 40s, I raised it to $25,000 for the first session. So I started making huge leaps. Obviously, now I work with a very exclusive list of clientele, but I also have 7,000 recordings available online that people can order. So they don't have to pay $25,000 to spend 2 hours with me. They can get a recording of me helping them, and they can get that for a lot less money. So I freed up a lot of my time. I started to value my time. I said, okay, I could spend 2 hours in the studio recording something that's going to help thousands of people. If you want 2 hours of my time, one-on-one, me and you, it's going to cost $25,000 because that's only a fraction of the wealth that I would generate during that 2 hours of creating a program to help people. So you can see how my money mindset changed. So I was making more money and I was helping more people. And now I'm at the point where I want to share that with you. I want to share my vision with you. I want to share the energy with you. I want to share my passion with you. I want to share with you the blueprint that worked for me. So in this program, I'm going to take you through it step by step. I'm going to share with you how it's done. And it's just like they say about golf. It's a mental game. It is a mental game more than anything. Wealth creation happens first and foremost in your mind. It doesn't mean that you're going to be imaginarily wealthy. It means that, first of all, you've got to change the way you're thinking. And that's 90% of it. So most of this program is going to be devoted to helping you change your mind, the way you think about money. So join me in Module 2 as we talk about the exciting energy that you can generate when you see the light at the end of the tunnel that you're in right now.